The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com, the Isle of Man's main Net Zero Progress website.
Seven minutes past 12 midday. Fast am I. Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say between now and one by calling 66 13 68. Email maninline at manxradio.com. But right now, email studio at manxradio.com. Text 166 177 and WhatsApp on the same number, 166 177. Well, multiple calls about flooding this morning. Fire crews from Douglas and Laxey were out and about. And let's face it, it's a good job as well. Several properties needed help pumping out to make sure occupants were safe after heavy rainfall. DOI was assisting in what were difficult working conditions. It was lashing down this morning, but the Fire and Rescue Service says, be aware of the changing weather as we move into winter. David's first with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. It's a shame that the DOI and those civil servants in there didn't realise what the warning was. Doesn't not anybody realise when the leaves start to fall, where do the leaves go in the road? They go straight to the gutters, the storm drains, and block them up. And we're not learning by our mistakes from years ago. And I hope that it's really criticism, but throwing it out there to people to have a look as well. If we do see trees falling down, the rivers getting branches in them and collecting up, there's a potential thing for flooding in that particular area, or a consequence even worse. But if you looked at the videos this morning on Facebook of Peel Road has just been done on the bridge going over, wouldn't you have thought they would have made sure that there was enough capacity for all the water that deluged down and ran down towards the petrol station.
After they spent all that money, you would have thought that would have been somewhere in the plan.
Well, I hope it was, and I maybe I'm just criticising for the sake of it, but there's no prevention there. I mean, the first thing you do is, what happened last year? We do have records. God bless them, the weather people down at Ronald's Way have records. So you know every time you're coming into October towards November, it's going to rain more, isn't it? We've had a great summer, and the leaves are all starting to fall. They go somewhere. And if the vehicles don't come out and collect, the mechanical vehicles don't come out and collect all the leaves or sweep the leaves and take them away, they just sit on the top of the gullies. First set, they're wet, block them up. Next thing, it floods up. And I just wanted to remind Stephen, I know you'll be listening, but I just needed an update on the current home in Peel and what's happening with it. I just wanted to remind him, because he's one of our agents out in the West, isn't he?
He is. I just want to mention as well, I just wonder how many gully emptiers they've got, because I've seen one out and about, but you would have thought that emptying the gullies on Peel Road will be a number one priority.
Correct. And that should be every year. It's what we call preventative maintenance. So off the top of my head, I think Douglas Corporation have got two gully sucker. There's a difference between a gully sucker and a sweeper, which has the capacity to sweep up the leaves and take them away. The gully suckers, what they do is they've got the big tank on the back. They're called Vacta tankers, really. And what they do is they go to a gully. If it's not running, they try and flush it out, take the debris out. And if it doesn't work, they usually put a red bit of paint on it. And that would indicate to the highway division then that there's a blockage there. So I would say that we need to have that plan. And it's not a big plan. It just means Peel Road's at risk. Laxey's going to be at risk. And wherever there is, even in Onchan, there's certain places. I've seen some videos from Onchan, and we've had flooding in those particular areas. Year after year, we need to learn a lesson.
Okay. All right. Thanks, David.
Bye.
Cheers. Now it's 11 minutes after 12. I don't know whether you were affected by that this morning, but Peel Road is one of the most used roads on the Isle of Man, and it was well underwater this morning. The fire service basically say drains and gutters, your own drains and gutters should be cleared. And if you have coal or solid fuel fire, the chimneys are going to be swept. If they haven't been in the past 6 months. Any thoughts on this? There are concerns that the Isle of Man's postal service can't survive, that it may go in its current format. In a more digital world, Isle of Man Post Office is facing the big challenge of trying to adapt its services to stay viable. And it's where a community service meets a commercial entity. And how much of a community service do you want? Who's going to pay for that community service? And if it is going to be a commercial entity, then obviously if it's not making money, nobody's getting a return on the capital, it could go. So what are the threats to the postal system on the Isle of Man? Does this mean for the future of high street branches, jobs on the Isle of Man for the post office? Now, the chair of the post office is Stu Peters, MHK. Chief exec is Simon Neen.
I'm not confident at all that the post office can continue as it currently stands, because we're faced with a declining market and we've got to come to terms with that and we've got to manage that. And that seems to be a challenge that not everybody understands. I mean, if you think back, 20 years, every high street had a blockbuster video store in it. And now we don't, because that sort of market has changed. And it's the same with postal services. Everybody's gone digital, and therefore there isn't still the demand for traditional postal services.
You touched on the digital aspect there as a potential challenge. What are the main challenges along with the change to digital that you think the post office is facing going forward?
There's, pros and cons to digital for us. The pros being, obviously, there's a growth in e-commerce, a growth in postage as a result. But that's in the parcel market, and that's a market where we don't have protections. So unlike letters, where we have a monopoly protected entity to legislation to convey letters, we have nothing. For parcels, we compete for parcels, and that's a highly competitive, fiercely competitive parcel market.
Simon Neen, Chief Exec of the Post Office, and Stu Peters, the Chair. Times are changing. Times have changed, and as Simon Neen said, the letter market is protected, that's a monopoly, but the parcel market, well, you'll know if you order anything online, could be anybody who shows up, any one of three or four particular delivery people who come and put it on your doorstep. So that's the problem that they have, a diminishing market for postal services, but obviously post offices provide facilities for people to conduct business and to obviously pay bills at times. So you just wonder what's going to happen. Now, the focus really is on Kirkmichael Post Office, which could close as soon as December if a new postmaster or postmistress isn't hired. Now, Michael District Commissioners have voted in favour of holding a public meeting about the future of Kirkmichael. And if you live in the north, around Kirkmichael, this is you. This affects you. It could affect your daily life. A local democracy reporter Emma Draper spoke to the chair of Michael District Commissioners, Carol Lillywhite, and also got the thoughts on this matter from Simon Neen from the post office as well.
The commissioners feel very strongly that we need to maintain local services for local people. We are a rural community, and it's not always easy to get into Douglas or to Ramsey or even to Peel. Bus services are generally once an hour, and a journey for a post office service that is essential to a lot of our local people could involve a 4-hour return journey by bus, which would be unconscionable for people in the urban centres. We have quite a high population of elderly people who rely on local services, and it's part of keeping the heart of the community alive. That's what we're after. We want Kirkmichael is a vibrant community, much loved by all the residents.
Will you be advertising the role of postmaster or mistress in Kirkmichael?
So the incumbent postmaster has given notice to the post office, their intention to withdraw the service. So that's due to happen by the end of the year. We are in discussions with our colleagues across government about the services that are required going forward. And whilst we complete that process, we have decided, or the board have decided, to put out an expression of interest in Kirkmichael, so we can start to understand if there is interest in someone taking on that service or a different kind of service going forward.
Well, he didn't say what kind of different service going forward, so you wonder what the options are on offer to Kirkmichael. But expressions of interest, who can be bothered, basically? Who wants to commit their time to providing the post office? So you have to ask, and that was Carol Lillywhite who mentioned that, obviously, the North is a rural community, and getting into centres of population like Peel and Ramsey Douglas does take time. So, and there's, I suppose there's also the psychological effect of having a post office there. It may be that you very rarely use the post office, but you just wouldn't want it to go. You like the idea of a post office, but you never use it. Now, is that good enough in 2022 when hard economic facts have to be faced by the post office? So I wonder what your thoughts are regarding that. Is it comforting to see that sign of a post office being there but never using it? Do you have to kind of put your money where your mouth is and use the post office, or it will go? Let's face it, look what's happened to Isle of Man Bank. Look how few branches there are of the bank that has our name on it now. Don't use it, then you lose it. Any thoughts? Then text 166177, email studio at maxradio.com. WhatsApp as well. Now that Mr. Hooper is the DfE minister, that's Enterprise Minister, he can put his money where his mouth is to run the post office. The post office comes under DfE, so let's see if DfE will commit to giving, say, £1 million a year to a local sub-post office to keep it in the community. The mail services shouldn't shoulder this responsibility. DfE doesn't mind spending government millions on sponsorship and what have you. It's about time we saw the accounts of this department, says Rob. Somebody's got to pay for it, obviously. Obviously, the post office will pay a sub-postmaster or mistress or a business to provide this. There are many sub-post offices that are inside businesses. Obviously, the brewery's got the spa, and there are some post offices inside spa. There's a post office inside the co-op in Castletown. So now what to do with it? And any thoughts on the floods that happened this morning? Manx Telecom having problems since Wednesday this week. I've had no email service since Wednesday at 4 o'clock. I wonder if they're going to reduce my bills. Well, our phones aren't working terribly well here at the radio station. Sarah said, well, Stu Peters said it, the high street's changing, but the post office could move with the times. Banks are closing. So only have a bank counter facility. People have many parcels being delivered, so make the post offices those pick-up points. I think post offices are a very important community facility, says Sarah on 641. They could evolve and still be useful in today's society. Otherwise, we're letting the cyber monster win. We can already see the mental health impact on children missing out on social situations now, as their whole world is within their phones, encouraging everything to be done online is feeding the beast. Not even mentioning the obesity crisis. People need to move about more. Walk to the post office. Do mind a bit of business. It's also good for you. Better for your physical health as well as social mental health. So up your game, post offices. Make yourself relevant to our needs now. Wasn't there a Barclays branch inside the post office in Onchan at one time? I don't know whether it's still there. I don't know. I've not seen the sign recently. Maybe if you're around there. The DOI, I don't think there's any planning for this. There's no stitch in time. Winter means rain and water runs downhill. They just need to grasp the simple fact, says Jay on 828. Everybody's quick to blame the DOI for all the flooding. It's the responsibility of the local authorities to clear their own gullies. DOI is only responsible for strategic routes. So surely Douglas Corporation's responsible for the fire station area of the Peel Road, says D. Why is the post office focusing on not being protected? They should compete on reliability and cost. Do we ever get an answer as to why Isle of Man Post quoted higher than Manx Independent Carrier to deliver COVID tests when the postman goes about to almost every house anyway, says Texter on 805. The only successful post offices, 238 texts in, just to say, are the ones that have amalgamated with existing businesses. Co-op in Castletown incorporates the post office and can operate independently. So that's the way to do it, is it, to get on board with an existing business? What sort of business, though? I mean, obviously Spa and the co-op are grocery stores, general goods stores almost. What about other places? Would you ever think of having a post office elsewhere? Or what about the model whereby a community actually runs a post office? Get half a dozen, maybe 10 people who are like-minded who could run a post office in a particular community. And that is really, if we have to decide, do we actually want post offices? Is it what we want? Where do you get your stamps from, by the way? We had to stop using the Ramsey Post Office due to the attitude of the staff in there. Is that right, Graham? What was the problem there? What was happening in Ramsey? And thanks for the nice comments yesterday. We were at King William's College. The students of King William's College had a lot to say. And a week next Thursday, i.e. a fortnight as yesterday, we're going to be at Castle Rushen High School. We're going to be around all the schools between now and Christmas. And next Wednesday, David Ashford, MHK, is on Man in Line. Do you remember? One-time Treasury Minister, DHSC Minister, Douglas North MHK, one-time councillor in Douglas, and lots to say. He's chair of the planning committee, so we'll no doubt have his opinion on brownfield sites. And also he and the other Douglas North MHK, Mr. Wannenberg, have been talking about the state of Williston School. And Alex dropped a note into me just to say, it's nice to hear the students and hearing their opinions. Why don't you get out and talk to other people? Maybe go to Manx Utilities, to the Corpy Service Centre and the DOI. Well, we're more than happy to do that. Man in Line's been out before. We went to see the WI in Onchan a while back. Man in Line isn't rooted in the Manx Radio building. We aim to get out as often as possible to meet you, to hear your views, your opinions. So if you're perhaps part of a social club, a group or a society, or whether it is maybe Manx Utilities, and if you think you have something to say, then please get in touch. We look forward to meeting you and bringing Man in Line to you and hearing your opinions in the place that you are. And thank you, Barbara, also, for your nice comments about yesterday. I've got to thank all the students, Ernst and Bella and Jenna and Mia and Ned and Robbie and Philip and Bethan, for getting that together yesterday. The question was raised about how much it costs to actually service the LFTs and what have you. How much the LFTs actually cost? How much did LFT devices, how many were issued to Isle of Man residents? And how much it all costs? Well, bluntly, it cost £9 million. £9 million, the cost of buying the LFTs. How many were issued? I think it was about 160. I think they bought 3 million of the darn things, but I think there were 158,000 that are left to be distributed. So it's 3.1 million individual tests were distributed on the Isle of Man. The individual cost of each test to the government, I think, was about £2.75, ranging from £2.35 to £2.75 each. There was the cost of transporting the devices to the Isle of Man. That was £176,000. The cost of distributing the LFTs to Isle of Man residents by postal carrier was £800,000. So the total overall cost to the Manx taxpayer of LFT testing up to the 30th of September this year, taking into account the purchase cost of the devices, transportation to the Isle of Man and distribution on the Isle of Man, was £9,072,127.48. That's the figure provided by the government in response to a Freedom of Information request. So the cost of LFTs, purchasing, distribution, transport, just over £9 million was paid. To the phones now, Tony B's with us. Hi, Tony.
How you doing, Andy? Just a quick one. You mentioned that, as usual, the Isle of Man Bank, which doesn't exist anymore because it's owned by Bank of Scotland, NatWest effectively, that no longer exists. I don't know if everybody realises that or not, but it's not a bank called Isle of Man Bank. It's gone, it's finished. Why don't we turn the post office into a savings bank? In the UK, years ago, I used to have a post office savings account with a little charge book. If you turned it into a savings bank where people could go and get money over a counter, you might find a higher footfall. And when they're there, they'll do all the other stuff they need to do with a bank. Instead of the government keep pushing that we should get online and do everything over the internet. You know, the government is not thinking about strategically about anything. The only thing they want to do is build a wind farm, which won't be successful, because when the wind doesn't blow, it doesn't work. And the other thing is, interconnectors, which was one of their wonderful ideas, won't work either, because in the future, for the next 3 years, the UK is going to be short of electricity itself. So that's not a solution. We have to have our own supply of electricity in a secure, controlled manner by us, not by other people. I wonder if the Transformation Board will think about that.
I just wonder, let's get back to the post office. And obviously, we have to decide. I think we have to, you know, we have to make our minds up. Do we actually want post officers? Do we need post officers in areas? And, you know, is it a community function or is it a commercial entity? You know, what's it going to be?
I think it's both. I think the post office is basically like having a local shop, which is where a lot of them are placed now. If you don't have a local shop, it means you've got to either order over the internet, which for a lot of people is difficult, and you can't get a slot anyway sometimes. We're all being driven to go to the web, to go to the internet. And that's fine. But we shouldn't be forced, which is what they're doing. They're not thinking strategically about anything. It's, we want to become a digital location. Why? And the answer is, because it suits us. It's not because it's a good idea. Alf Cannon turns around and says, we've got a growing older population, but we're not going to do anything about helping them. What we're going to do is import a load of young people, which is the wrong word. That's really terrible to say that. He should be looking for people who've got no children with them, which means you've got to be over 40 probably. That's what he should be looking for, but that's not what he says. If you had no children, then you wouldn't need 15,000. I assume the 15,000 he keeps coming out with is 15,000 working people. Put 2.3 children per person or per family, and you're going to have 25,000 or 35,000.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. He's never mentioned that the extra 15,000. Is that 15,000 in total, or as you say, working population?
Well, that's what we need to know. It's no good saying, well, you know, we're going to increase the population by 15,000. Well, is that 15,000 babies, 15,000 10-year-olds, 15,000 working people? I can understand the aim, increase the exchequer's income, but there's other ways of achieving that. And they're not looking at any other ways. This government is blind to any outside selection of thoughts or ideas. They won't listen to anybody. They have their own ideas, and that is, we're going to do it this way. They keep saying, we've given you a plan. It's not our plan, it's their plan, because they never asked us about it. I don't remember ever getting something through the door saying, do you agree that we've got global warming, so we need to build a wind farm? I don't ever remember hearing that, do you?
No, I don't think anybody. I mean, people talked about it at the election. Some of the candidates talked about it, but they didn't really
give you any detail, and they didn't say this is our plan, because they don't have a plan. They keep grasping at straws, and basically, the world is moving on, and what it's moving to is something where you won't be able to do what they keep going on about. I don't have a problem with building a wind farm. I have a real problem that when it doesn't work, we've got no electricity. That's what I've got a problem with. And it's going to be very, very expensive electricity because all the wind farms in the UK are subsidised, as is the coal pellet or the pellet burning power station that they've got in the near I think it's near the A1, Drax.
Oh yes, yeah, that's it, yeah.
And that's not a very effective way of doing things. Cutting down forests in Canada, putting them into pellets and moving them across here to burn. That's more polluting than using coal. There's no thought goes into this. It's let's follow a mantra.
Well, it makes you wonder, Drax Power Station, when it was coal-fired, provided 4% of Britain's electricity. One power station.
Yeah, it's massive. And the output from it was relatively clean for coal. It was the cleanest coal-burning fire station, but probably in the world, because they use special ways of keeping the coal burning better. They added water, and they've also pumped in air. So they had a very, very advanced coal-burning efficient power station. But because we listen to a bunch of people who think that that's bad, we've now got an extremely polluting wood-burning power station. But it's okay because you can grow a tree again. It only takes about 60 or 70 years to grow a tree. What are they, bonkers?
All
we
right.
have got global change. We need to address the outcome of that, not trying to stop it.
All right, Tony.
Not stop.
We appreciate
good
that.
Luck.
Have a good weekend.
But change it to a bank, access the deposits you'll get. Even look at it. Ask people.
All right. Thanks for calling today. 27 minutes to one. So I just wonder what your thoughts are on that. But the fact that Isle of Man Bank is shrinking, will continue to shrink. What are there now? Two branches in Douglas, one in Ramsey, one in Port Erin. Who knows what's going to happen with that? So is it time to seize the nettle and make the Isle of Man Post Office a bank as well, and to do something with that, perhaps to attract investors and deposits?
Are you a reluctant landlord, tired of tenant hassles, cursed by constant maintenance, tormented by empty properties producing no rent? Want to escape these worries or get out altogether?
At Prime Lettings, we understand your pain and have bespoke solutions to release you from these problems. Ring us on 616 707 for a free confidential chat.
Prime Lettings. We're on call and on the ball at 616 707.
With over 30 years' experience delivering all types of products to and from the Isle of Man for private individuals and businesses, both large and small. Brakewells is a name people can trust. As specialist island hauliers, we offer a dedicated, speedy service by driver-accompanied vehicles with no transshipment. We also offer secure England storage facilities at excellent rates. For all of your delivery requirements, make Brakewells your first choice. Visit brakewells.com. Brakewells. 50 years serving the islands.
Concerned, confused, or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved, and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies, and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
Drive smarter. Drive more reliable. Drive a great deal at Man In Motors. With a superb range of cars for every budget, always available. And if we don't have it, we'll source it. Plus, servicing, valeting, and prestige detailing too. Man In Motors, Richmond Hill, Douglas. Find us on Facebook or call 420 420. That's 420 420. Drive a better bargain at Man In Motors.
I'm sure Bernard Moffat wouldn't mind me saying that he's seen many iterations of government and Tynwald come and go. He's still a regular contributor to political debate on social media and continues as Assistant General Secretary of the Celtic League. With the Canada administration about to embark on some fairly radical changes, Bernard gives his seasoned view on population growth, social media's influence on political debate, and much, much more. That's Perspective this Sunday at 12 noon with me, Phil Gorn, on Manx Radio. While he styles himself as the cuddly old granddad of Manx politics, watch out for his false teeth. They can still inflict a nasty bite.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com. Helping Isle of Man companies and citizens to understand net zero targets and a green future.
Was there any flooding at the bottom of Broad?
Yes, and it was interesting, should I say, listening to Tony's Saloon Bar Daily Mail wisdom on renewables, which, of course, well, that might be the attitude of somebody from 40 years ago who thinks that everything here should be like it was across 40 years ago and that people should potter to the post office with their savings book. Do people save nowadays? Has he seen the interest rates? No, we are now living in the 21st century, Tony, and 21st century solutions for 21st century problems, not 19th century solutions, for 21st century problems. I dare say he supports the ideas of people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and that kind of stuff. But to actually come up with some facts on renewables and such, one of the reasons why I advocate offshore wind is not to fulfill Manx power needs, it's to get the seabed leasing revenue, which is part of that revenue that we need to keep the island going, which another way of getting that revenue is, of course, the population growth plan. But the offshore leasing revenue could provide all that without any necessity for an expanded population tax base. So that's the first thing. Second thing for domestic generation of renewables. Now, I'm very glad to hear that sort of Tim Johnson, chairman of MUA, is saying, yes, we've been behind the curve on renewables and we need to actually crack on with this. However, the idea of 20 megawatts by 2026 is just, it's sort of, you know, too little too late. 20 megawatts, I know, is the view that MUA technical people take about how much the grid can cope with at any one time. But there are many other technical people who think that is a highly conservative view, to put it mildly, and that, you know, a larger scale of renewable could actually be placed in without too much problem. And, you know, as I've said before, there are people who are circling, waiting to land, who are waiting to put this kind of scale of onshore wind up, you know, 50 to 100 megawatts, and they're the ones who are going to pay for it.
So why isn't the government racing towards this, Bonzo?
You tell me. I think it's a notion of, well, if we're cautious, then we can't be sort of have fingers pointed at us for doing something that other people don't like. There are obviously things like planning considerations that may come up. But this may percolate out into whatever iteration the island plan is. But, I mean, we're now a year on from the elections. And still we're really no further at all. I'll be interested to see what happens when the climate change transformational plan and other aspects of climate change action that can come before Tynwald later this month.
There's nothing at the moment, though, that anybody can hang their hat on, Bonzo. Nobody's saying offshore wind. No, there are no firm plans for onshore wind. There's nothing where that's concerned. And you just get the feeling that at the moment, there seems to be quite a bit of talk, but nothing in the way of action. And people's attention then tends to wander and think, the government's not serious.
Then we get to chicken and egg, because the government need to show willing for private investment to then crystallise and say, fine, this is what we're going to do, rather than, you know, having the intention of doing, knocking on the door again, and then knocking on the door again, and still not getting any answer.
Okay, well, just let me ask you one question then. You talked about post offices right at the beginning. Do you think post offices should be sticking around? Do you think it's the post office's job to maintain physical bricks and mortar branches?
I think that's a political decision, because that's going to have to be something which is going to have to be seen as a social good, which is going to need some form of government subsidy to do it. It's not going to be something that is commercial. How that then may evolve, whether it will become a sort of pick-up point or parcels or, you know, or whatever. I think that's, you know, probably for future trends to decide. But at the moment, yes, things have progressed more to an online state. And, of course, younger people are more used to using that kind of method. So, you know, like, you know, Stu Peter says, like Blockbuster Video. You know, we don't go down to the video store and rent great big brick videos anymore.
Well, if you remember, what was it called? Lovefilm.com. That's now ended up as Netflix. So if it is all one way to online, don't we kind of lose our options if, you know, obviously that will just be then off-island parcel transporters who will have us over a barrel?
Well, as I say, it's a question of whether we look at these things as national interest or whether we wish to bring in some kind of protected status of the post office as it has on letters as regards parcels. That may be one way to go. But I said that, you know, these are political decisions which are going to involve government money.
Okay, all right. Have a good weekend, Bonzo.
And you.
Thanks
and
for calling today. Let's go to Janet, who's with us. Hi, Janet.
Hello.
Hi, Janet. You're live on the air.
Oh, right. Okay. I'd just like to stick up for the people in the post office. I said I've never had a bad word with them my entire life, but that's not what I've come on for. I've come on for when they had the Queen's holiday for the funeral. The people, I don't know who runs the post office. Who runs the post office?
Well, it's a government entity.
Right. Well, the government entity, as you call them, told them to take the Monday off because they were closing, but they weren't getting paid.
Right.
A staff member told me. So maybe they caught one of them on a bad day when they found out they weren't getting paid.
Oh, I see. Which post office do you use in Ramsey?
There's only one, isn't there?
No, right.
I think. Don't quote me on that in case there's one somewhere else, but the one in the street behind the...
Oh, in Parliament Street, at the back of the... Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for calling today.
Okay, thank
you. All right, thank you. Carol dropped me a note in, just said, I haven't been to Douglas for a while. Last week, I went to Isle of Man Bank in Regent Street to change my English paper notes to be sold. We don't carry cash in this bank. Is that right? Regent Street, Isle of Man Bank, doesn't carry cash? I hadn't heard about that, but if you can confirm that, we'd be very appreciative. Perhaps the post office, if the post office hadn't spent £24,000 on one electric vehicle, the only white one that's in Ramsey, they could have kept some of that and perhaps used it for a post office counter to keep going for considerable time. That's Texter 466 for that message. Your caller is right. Apparently, Ramsey post office has a couple of staff who are rather abrupt, but there is a lovely girl there who is very caring, and thank you. Thank you for that. That's Lynn's message in about that. Well, one person's briskness is another person's brusqueness. So Dr. Allinson's listening to people struggling with the cost of living, is he? Hope he's listening to your show. We'll find out more. We didn't get to it yesterday. I brought it up briefly with the students of King William's College, but I'd like your opinion on this, please, and it's regarding vaping on the Isle of Man. A number of retailers have told Manx Radio they'd be keen to see new rules brought in about children, and it is children, vaping. And they want children and teenagers under the age of 18 to be banned from purchasing vaping products on the Isle of Man. Now, the owner of Offshore Vapes in Strand Street in Douglas is Giles Day.
Nearly all the flavours on there are sort of replicating sweet-type flavours that you find in sweet shops and things like that. But, I mean, the whole disposable vape craze at the moment seems like something straight out of the tobacco company playbook. Back in the day, it was widely acknowledged that the tobacco company's marketing was to try and get consumers as young as possible so they'd have a customer for life. So the fact that these things are going marketed on social media platforms to kids, the colours are attractive to kids, The flavours are attractive to kids. I've noticed a lot of petrol stations, for example, on the Isle of Man, normally tobacco products are behind the counter and behind a cupboard. I've noticed now you've got freestanding display cabinets full of vape products that are at eye level, low down. So for me, if I go in, I've got to crouch down to see them, but they're the perfect height for young people to see. And again, unfortunately, whilst we do strictly impose an over 18s only policy, there's nothing to stop any other company on the Isle of Man perfectly legally selling these products to under 16 year olds.
Do you think we need new laws here on the island to stop that happening?
Well, I'd like to see, for a start, a minimum age limit introduced, but I'd also like to see more heavier regulation around the sale of nicotine products, particularly tobacco products, given that we now know the damage that cigarettes can do. The fact that someone 16 could go into a newsagent's or previously a post office and buy these sort of things. And I always question about the level of knowledge of the people selling these products as well, as to how invested are they in making sure that it doesn't turn into a problem.
That's Giles Day. You know, he owns Offshore Vapes, and you heard what he had to say about that. And lots of vaping products today are sweet flavoured. I mean, they're caramel or raspberry or what have you. And they're aiming at younger children. I just wonder, I mean, do you think that vaping leads to smoking? Perhaps is obviously lots of stuff can be bought on the internet. But I'm just interested to get your take on this, whether vaping fits into the smoking infrastructure, whether vaping does lead to smoking, or perhaps it's only ex-smokers who vape. I'm just reminded a few years ago, do you remember when that craze for sweet vodka came out, caramel flavored vodkas, and suddenly it was very easy to be able to drink vast amounts of vodka, sometimes to dreadful effect. And the Alcopops craze before that, when sweet alcohol came about. Now, is this just a way, is vaping a way of getting young people into the idea of inhaling something in their mouth and smoking? And perhaps it affects you. Perhaps you're a parent or a carer who's got a youngster in the house who vapes. Get in touch. Text, email, or call on Man in Line today. Robbie said, Andy, look, in Thailand, some of the big supermarkets have banks and post offices open supermarket hours. Some are open 24 hours a day. Perhaps it's time to ask Tesco, ShopRite, if Co-op, if the Co-op can have a post office inside, why not one perhaps inside a ShopRite branch? Says a texter. This is Alison. Thank you for that, Alison. So post offices inside the big supermarkets, perhaps.
We are number one. We are family run. Mike's Motors. Mike's Motors.
All the nice motors are at Mike's Motors. From cars you can cruise in to motorhomes you can all snooze in. Whether you want to plug it in overnight or plug through muddy fields all day, no one has a better selection of quality used motors. So come and see why Mike's Motors are better by miles.
Mike's Motors.
Call 823-200. Click mikesmotors.im.
Manx Gas is changing its name to Isle of Man Energy. Our vision is to be more than a gas company, so we can offer customers choice in their energy management. We're committed to helping during the energy crisis by offering new solutions and services, like our smart home products, so you can use energy more efficiently. And for the future, we're looking at alternatives to natural gas, such as biogas and green hydrogen, to support the Isle of Man's green energy transition. Find out more at isleofmanenergy.im. Energy for every generation.
Are you in your last year of college or A-levels? Maybe you've just finished and you're looking for your next step. If that sounds like you, then make sure to visit orchardrecruitment.com. Our fully responsive website enables you to quickly apply for jobs, upload and store your CV, manage job alerts, and chat live with our expert recruiters. If you're looking at a career in the finance sector, then take a look at our entry-level positions at orchardrecruitment.com. Orchard Recruitment, a refreshing change.
Majestic food, majestic views. The Majestic Chinese Restaurant Douglas. The perfect setting for corporate celebrations this Christmas. Call Simon on 682 791 for details and booking, or search Majestic Chinese Douglas on Facebook.
After another spell on the road, FC Isle of Man are back on Ireland this weekend and will be hunting some much-needed points in the NWCFL Premier Division. The Ravens will be hoping to make some good progress when they host Padiham at the Bowl this Saturday. Join me, Rob Pritchard and Tony Meppen for FC Isle of Man versus Padiham, kicking off this Saturday at 6 p.m. Manx Radio will be providing full live match commentary on our AM 1368 and digital platforms. Live coverage of FC Isle of Man on Manx Radio AM 1368 is supported by Selton, investing in our community.
The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com. The world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
And fingers crossed for the Ravens. Lots of people actually take the radios, those Radio TT radios, to the match and listen to the commentary as well as watching it live. It's a great day and we wish them well tomorrow. Some more texts in. Who was with the Chief Minister when he travelled to meet the Crown Prince of Bahrain? Are we going to know the result of the meeting and when there's a benefit for Isle of Man PLC, says Andy on the WhatsApp? Well, you wonder what... well, I guarantee one thing. I don't think Mr. Buchanan would have gone on his own to see the Crown Prince of Bahrain, but we'll wait to find out. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Just talking about the 15,000 new people coming to the island. I remember a caller called in to speak to Alf Cannon live, and I think Alf Cannon did specify that there would be 5,000 economically viable plus another 10,000, which I don't think was ever specified. It makes you wonder, though, what kind of age group are we talking about with these workers? Because if we're worried about an aging population, if you've got somebody that's financially active and doing sort of entrepreneurial things, we're just kicking the can down the road a bit, aren't we? Because if they're sort of 40-odd, you're going to have another problem in some time in the future, nearer than later, aren't you? I noticed when I attended the government conference at the Villa Marina, as a South African entrepreneur, I think, who's come over to the island and was he brought an e-gaming company to the island. So it kind of gives the complexion of the type of person that they might be looking for. So that's another question. Is there going to be a minimum qualification for these 5,000 economically viable people, in which case what is that qualification? Are they going to have a certain amount of economic backing behind them so that they can start new companies here?
Well, and obviously with that notional 15,000, as you say, breaking it down as to, and the idea of 15,000 economically active is a very attractive, but you say he said 5,000.
There was 5,000 plus another 10,000 unspecified, so right. That could be their families or whatever that is. But it does make you wonder how that's going to work. And I do wonder why there's no talk about giving financial impetus, you could say, to young people to have kids on the island, because then you've got locals, you know, who love the island, share the values. You know, it's not sort of importing rather than growing here.
Well, I mean, that's fairly easily done. All you need to do is to give tax breaks for people who have children, or up the child benefit rates. That will come through fairly quickly, I would have thought.
I would have thought so. You know, I mean, you know, looking at the bigger picture, you had Bonzo on before, and he was saying about, you know, growing the population to pay for, you know, the energy generation and things. But I have a, with all due respect to Bonzo, I think he's got a slight blind spot, because when we talk about generating with wind turbines, we're talking about electricity, aren't we?
Yeah.
So lights and washing machines and hoovers and stuff like that. But the vast majority of people are heating their houses with gas or oil, which is 10 times what the electrical... It's between 5 and 10 times, depending on the latitude and the climate. So that energy that's locked up in all that gas, if you get rid of the gas, you're going to have to displace that with electricity. And that's why Germany's having such a big problem at the moment, because the gas has been turned off. They're having to go to coal because their wind turbines are turning out, the figure is 117 terawatts at the moment, according to the Office of National Statistics in Germany. But the amount of gas that they consume is 900 terawatts. So you've got 100 and something being generated over 26,000 turbines, which I think take up 1 million acres across Germany. But the amount of energy required to heat those places, and I've been in Berlin in minus 34 degrees, so you really want to have some heating going on, it's somewhere around 9 times to 10 times the requirement of the electrical generation from their renewables. So there's a conundrum.
Okay. All right. We appreciate it, Julian. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks
Bye.
For calling today. And from Andy, who just said, as regarding Julian's call, do you think there should be a cut-off age for new residents who aren't economically active? Say, 45 years of age? Should that be what it is? That's it for Man in Line today. I've got some big news, by the way. Some big news I simply have to get. And it's our friend Wilf Young, who's just dropped us a message in to say Wilf Young is retiring from doing skips. He's been doing the Queenspear work and skips and says they're going to need somebody else now. So good job to promote the business. If anybody's interested in taking on the skips for the Queenspear. Thank you, Wilf. Good to hear from you. Lots of questions about the amount of money that the lateral flow test cost. Well, the overall cost, £9 million. Max Radio will have a breakdown of this on maxradio.com on the news site as the day goes on. But £9 million for that. That's it. Back on Monday with an open line. Thanks to Howie producing today. Have a good weekend.
WINT.